The Around the NFL podcast is accepting tailgate invites.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What is happening?
Things are great. Things are really great because it's good to be alive. I've been all over this world, guys.
Dan's especially happy because he's in the country, the United States.
The only country he likes.
That is totally untrue. I am a world traveler compared to some people in here. We were talking about before we came on. This is where I've been. A lot of countries. You ready? America. One.
Doesn't count.
Texas, two. It's its own country. Ask anybody from Texas. Texas declares they have their own state flag.
We've all been to Texas.
They have their own odd curriculum, too.
That's two. Mexico. Cancun, spring break, 2K1. What a party.
Culture. I like it.
Canada. And my paramour, Kirby, up in Toronto.
I forgot about your made-up relationship with Kirby.
The motherland, Ireland, 96. Nice week on the buses. Seeing all the great Emerald Isle. It's a lot of places. So anybody, you want to come at me, Mark, like you were.
Well, it wasn't about that you hadn't traveled as much, although that's true, too, as much as you just didn't like or see the need to ever leave the country in the future.
My wife always comes, is like, we got to go somewhere, we got to go somewhere. I'm like,
Well, she's right.
It's good. I'm happy right now. Maybe down the road, I'll see the earth.
You've made some slightly jingoistic comments.
I disagree.
Dan's like, yeah, once we have more kids, they get old, then it'll become really easy to travel.
Oh, what's my jingoistic comment? Best damn country in the world? That one?
Don't need to go anywhere else. Well, I'm good here.
As Greg mentioned, you don't have to challenge that if you don't go anywhere else.
And it's like, this is all a roundabout way for Mark to mention, oh, I used to live in England. All right, Mark, we got it.
You mentioned it. I didn't
say a word about time in Australia.
It's like, oh, I was in Easter Island. Like, all right, what do you want from me?
I was keeping relatively quiet because you embarrassed yourself before the show with your perspective. It was downright embarrassing, and you should listen to your wife.
Listen, I'm just a regular Joe. I don't have a ton of dough to
it's
travel
not regular
around
Joe.
The planet like some other people. I don't know what happened in your Connecticut upbringing.
It's not regular
behind
Joe.
Your ivy walls.
It's not a regular Joe scenario we're dealing with here.
The old Zeuser, he's a man of the people.
The old Zeuser is like a raging fireball diva about to take the show down 4 minutes in.
The guy who nicknamed himself after the greatest god in history who lives on Mount Olympus is a regular Joe.
Just a guy, man. I'm a jag. This is the Around the NFL podcast, Tuesday edition. So you know what happens on Tuesdays. We got a lot of stuff to get to, and I'll go over it real quick before we get into it. We're going to recap that Monday Night Football game. A wild ending, the Seahawks and Lions. I'm sure there'll be plenty of hot takes. Hot takes aplenty from the Around the NFL team, including Wes wearing a Henley shirt today.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
Very masculine.
I don't think it is a Henley.
It's close, though. It's got the buttons.
All right, whatever you say.
We will also – everyone, you guys are just questioning me on all turns.
Well, it's time.
also, we have some news to get to. We have to fork some teams. We forked how many teams last week? Four.
Not enough.
No one knows.
Like the entire AFC South.
Okay, we forked, I believe, four teams last week at least. We'll double check on that, and that means that they have no chance of making the postseason. And there are going to be, gentlemen, three more teams that join that group. Our stick of forking them, chatter. Also, we are going to do our Thursday night preview of the Thursday night football game between Mark.
The Houston Texans and the Colts of Indianapolis.
Very good. And then we will do, we had our power poll that we unveiled, I believe, the last day of August, about a week before the season started. And now with the season one quarter through, Greg, 16 games for each team, each regular season, 16 divided by 4 is 4. So this seems like a good time to check in on our power poll, our second edition of the power poll, and we'll also check what we have right, what we have wrong, what's cooking.
What's changed in the power poll, and that'll be up on the website as well. Maybe we'll do NFL.com/power poll.
Yes. I like that. It's a good
now I have to remember to do that.
And so that's what's coming up on the show. Very exciting show. I look forward to every time, Greg, I come upstairs, look forward to this. This is fun.
This is what it's all about. This isn't work.
Greg barely alive right now. It's trying to get something out of him. There's not much there right now.
Well, I'm just saying, let's get to the news. Let's go.
All right. Sorry. All right, boss. Before we get to the news, though, behind the glass, we have, you know, the Irishman, Brendan McGinnis, is gone.
Thank you. Now that he's gone, you dropped the tea from his last
Sully, I finally was made aware that there was no tea on his last day. Sully's also gone. They did great work. But now, rising, a real future star is Sydney Carlson behind the glass. What's up, Sydney?
Hey, guys.
Sydney.
Great
Welcome.
To be here. Great to be part of the team.
Yeah, so Sydney will be helping us out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we'll be getting to know each other. Right now, it's almost like that first day of school thing where, you know, you're just feeling each other out. In a couple of weeks, it'll be like just a bunch of buddies. Right?
Well said.
Whatever, Greg. Why are you on my case today?
Dad?
Concerned about Sully, by the way.
Why?
Saw some image, I think it was on Facebook, some sort of social media platform where he's back in Tennessee.
Uh-oh.
He was at a Vols game. His plan for like the next 2+ months is just to stay at his parents' house and go to Tennessee Volunteers games. Just some wild, he looked massively inebriated to me, just dressed in orange from head to toe, otherworldly Sully doing absolutely nothing with his adult life.
That sounds like the picture of any Sully event I've ever had in my mind.
Sounds great.
It sounds awesome. All right, so let's before we get into the news, Sydney, why don't we do a little Monday Night Football? Ooh, jaunty. Cam Chancellor, Seattle Seahawks, Seahawks safety, punched the ball out of Calvin Johnson's hands at the goal line, preventing a game-winning touchdown in the Seahawks' 13-10 win over the Lions on Monday night. And, of course, that was not the biggest story, unfortunately. After the game, it was the call that was missed by officials, the ball being punched out of bounds by Seahawks linebacker K.J. Wright. Should have been a penalty for batting the ball out of the back of the end zone. First and goal from the one for the Lions. Instead, the call is not made. Game over. The Detroit Lions, 0-4. Rest easy in that good night. The Seahawks are very lucky and fortunate. Chris Wessling, 2-2, right?
No, the Seahawks aren't lucky.
How is that not lucky? How is that not lucky?
They controlled the whole game. All K.J. Wright had to do was fall on the ball. I hate these little controversies that everybody gets worked up about when they really have little to do with what happened in the game.
Well, that's fair, and I agree. That said, the offense all night for Seattle had nothing going except for just Russell Wilson's scrambles. And if one of the greatest receivers of all time doesn't fumble at the one-yard line, they're facing and it was totally a great play by Cam Chancellor. He deserves credit for that. But he should have tucked the ball away, Calvin Johnson. They were about to be trailing and staring at a 1-3 record unless they went down and scored a touchdown. So they still have to be considered fortunate that they got this call going their way.
Well,
of course.
I fully expected Russell Wilson to lead them on a touchdown.
What did he show in the second half, or really the whole game, that made you think that was going to happen?
I think it's more about what Russell Wilson showed in his career, and I just believe in him. The Seahawks were in control all game. They got, you know, there was a fumble that Lions returned for a touch. The Lions couldn't do anything on offense.
Right, they were two very similar looking teams, I thought.
Well, the Seahawks could do a few things. Let Russell Wilson run around for 8 seconds in the pocket and then make a couple of plays, but that was the only offense in the game.
This is a terrible job, though, by the Seahawks. They were up 13-3 in complete control. The offense completely sputters out. And, yeah, I don't disagree, Wes, that I could see if the Lions did score that touchdown, I could see the Seahawks coming back to win it. They're not a team you can count out, and that offense comes to life out of nowhere, it seems, at times. But 13-3, they turn the ball over at midfield, and the Lions can't do anything about it. Then Russell Wilson turns it over again, running for the touchdown, a 3-and-out, and now here comes the Lions marching down the field for the win. The Seahawks, this was not a great performance by this team, and I still think that there is a lot of reasons to be concerned if you're a Seattle fan that this team has not come together.
Well, Seattle's the kind of team that will come together and figure itself out. They've done that. Last year at this time, we were very concerned about the Seahawks.
Yep, they started slow.
But it's not a formula. It's a formula to win when Russell Wilson is as mobile as he is and is so aware of the field and where his receivers are, and he's able to extend the plays with his feet the way that he does, doubling the length of passing plays. But the offensive line is a legitimate sieve. It's, I don't know if that's a formula that you can count on for long before disaster will strike. I mean, it's going to affect your quarterback after some time.
It reminds me of Russell Wilson's rookie year, which they started out and they were not able to throw the ball at all. And eventually they turned it around. And last year where they started out very slow offensively and they did turn it around. But I think this is a problem. I think Russell Wilson gets a little bit of a pass. Granted, the offensive line was bad, but he still took two sacks. He fumbled twice. He led the league in fumbling 2 years ago. He led the league in fumbling last year. And now he had two fumbles last night, one return. So that's part of the equation when you talk about Russell Wilson. I don't think you can totally ignore that when comparing him to some of the best quarterbacks in the league. They're not leading the league in fumbling. They're not fumbling as often. If Jay Cutler did something like that last night, you know, we would kill him.
Yeah, but that's going to happen because of his mobility.
It's completely unfair. He gets a pass for a reason because they built this roster to rely wholly on Russell Wilson's sandlot football ability. And when you are forced to run around in the backfield for seconds and seconds and seconds on every play, fumbles are going to happen. That's how they built their team.
Some people would argue he has to run around, though, because he doesn't see open receivers. So it's what he does well. He's an amazing quarterback, but it all kind of comes together. I mean, sometimes he's got to get rid of the ball sooner than
and
he does.
The other part of this offense, a big part of this offense is what Russell Wilson can do and making things happen. But it's really, this offense has always been built around that running game, and Lynch. Here's the connective tissue between Marshawn Lynch's first three games and then Thomas Rawls is getting swallowed up behind the line of the scrimmage. Yeah. And that's back to your point, Mark, that this team is not run blocking well. Russell Wilson is scrambling constantly. There's no way for this offense to get into a groove. And I thought it was telling. John Gruden at one point highlighted Russell Wilson took off when Jimmy Graham kept running downfield, didn't pick up an outside blocker. And Gruden made a comment along the lines of, Jimmy Graham doesn't know what he is in this offense, doesn't know what he's doing in this offense. There's still a lot of stuff that needs to be get worked out here.
But I think that's not a shock to me. When you don't have Lynch on the field, you're still figuring it out with Graham. We're not going to see their prime performance in week four. Their best offense has been their defense.
Yeah.
Because when you're going to allow 10 points or you're going to shut out the Bears, the offense doesn't have to do much. Now, last year in games, they did, and they responded. I don't see them being able to score 20-plus points a game if they get into that situation.
I think they'll figure things out, but they need to figure out what to do with Jimmy Graham because, you know, he got hammered in the pregame shows for his poor blocking this year, and they usually count on the tight end to block. And they just need to figure out how to best use him because it's not happening right now. He has not been much of a factor, and they really seem to miss Max Unger. I mean, they had a Pro Bowl center, and that's where a lot of the pressure was coming last night. And I do agree with you, Wes, to talk a little bit about the call that it was a little bit of a technicality. I totally understand why people were up in arms about it. It was such a bad call that Dean Blandino got on the air immediately after to say it was a bad call. For him to do that, it's saying we couldn't have screwed this one up more. Now, maybe it's a stupid rule, but he was basically signaling, you know, it's a terrible call. If there's any gray area there, he's not going to get on the air and say, you know, our bad right away.
Isn't the whole process what's broken about it? And Dan mentioned this on the Dave Damashek football program earlier today, too, just that when everyone, let's not sit around and pretend we knew the rule. Maybe 1 out of 1,000 people are sitting around knowing that rule. But the point is, when the ref doesn't catch it, but your command nerve center in New York, or most fans, after it's discussed after a while, realize that a grave mistake was made, then you have to be able to reverse it. You can't have these calls that aren't reversible.
It's tricky. I mean,
why is it tricky, though?
Bill Belichick would like everything.
Black eye.
Bill Belichick would like everything to be reviewable. You know, the NFL would say, we don't want to review judgment calls. I understand why this is a judgment call on some level. Maybe you make it that everything inside 2 minutes is reviewable.
I would take the 180-degree opposite view of Bill Belichick and make nothing reviewable. Disrupts the flow of the game, makes a mockery out of the catch rule, and just manufactures controversy that we don't need.
Here's the problem with that, though, because we've already been down that road. They had
there is more controversy with the replay than there was without it.
They had a replay in the early 90s. They got rid of it, and then calls are getting missed over and over again. It cost the Seahawks a playoff spot in 98, which is the impetus for it coming back in 99. You just had the same different problems but same issues. It would just be different
issues.
That's
jobs and money.
Right, and without replay, it doesn't disrupt the flow of the game. You're still getting controversy. You're a league who pays people to explain roles to the audience because the audience doesn't understand them. every network employs a rules.
It is tough.
A rules statement right. guy, and because nobody knows the rules.
And even then, you know, the ESPN broadcast, Mike Tirico, who's the very best at knowing the rules, they had no, they didn't mention anything about
that
it.
That was the first
the
time I've ever seen Tirico miss something.
But this is one where someone can act smart, but this is one where no one knew what the rule was.
Pete Prisco did. That was about it. The second it happened, he said that should be Lions ball. It's a stupid rule anyway. And by the way, you know what else is a stupid rule? That the ball goes – maybe this is getting too far.
But the ball's far. Oblong. It's like, how about a real ball?
Right. Well, that was ball. That's why the technicality is also stupid, because the ball was probably going out of bounds. And KJ Wright, if he knew the rule, would have just caught the ball and the game's over. It probably didn't really affect the game. I think it's stupid that the – defense gets the ball back in that scenario. I never understood that. Why does the – and I think that could change. I think there's some sentiment that the offense keeps the ball. Whoever possessed the ball last gets to keep it.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I think it's weird that – yeah,
it's weird. The rule's different in the end zone.
It goes to the 20-yard line. Yeah, that's always been a weird rule. Going back to Ben Watson against the Broncos.
Right, exactly. And I think there has been talk that that could change at some point.
By the way, between the Fail Mary and now this, the Seahawks catching some breaks in primetime – we're all even for that Super Bowl against the Steelers.
What this game?
Nobody can complain anymore.
That was a Super Bowl, Dan, please.
My primary complaint about that controversial call is that it overshadowed this game, which was basically emblematic of what's going on for the first four games of the season, that offensive lines are a huge problem mm-hmm. for every disappointing team in the league this year. Mm. And this game was perfect example of that.
Keep that point in mind when we get to the Power Bowl.
I mean, the line. You want to talk a little bit about, I mean, the Lions, that has been the case every single – it's amazing to watch a team with Abdullah, Tate, Calvin Johnson, in theory, Matthew Stafford, although I don't know how big a plus is.
That's
looking
a big
so unexplosive.
We have to start considering that Calvin Johnson isn't what we thought he was. He's no longer that guy. You're matched up with Kerry Williams one-on-one, and you're just not making plays. Whether you want to blame it on Joe Lombardi or Matthew Stafford, when the ball comes in your direction, sometimes you just have to catch it and make a play.
All right, so that is that. Now, Sydney, if you would, if you don't mind, let's do some news.
That might be the craziest question that I've gotten in the history of football.
I didn't think it was that crazy.
Sydney is shining out of the gate.
So far,
Chuck Pagano last week when the reporter asked him if Andrew Luck was in the state of Indiana.
That's a fair response. All right, let's start with the Miami Dolphins. Joe Philbin out as head coach, as everyone learned early on Monday. He was fired after 3+ seasons. The Dolphins out to a 1-3 start. Replacing him on an interim basis is Dan Campbell, the tight ends coach, who has the power to decide, I guess. I know Kevin Coyle, the defensive coordinator, has been a major issue around the team, at least internally, as a problem as well. But there's been no decision made yet on whether Coyle will remain with the team. I assume they got a, you know, they're on a bye week. But the more time that passes, he's probably going to stay the coach, right?
I think that could come out before people hear this podcast sometime Tuesday, maybe Wednesday.
Make a move if you are.
Either way, I think they'll announce that he's staying or not. It does sound like he could be gone.
Right. So Philbin out. Mark, I'll start with you on this one. You don't have to be some type of football genius to see that this was probably not a marriage built to last, but was this the right time to get out now, or should they have ridden out a little further?
Well, the right time to get out of it would have been after last season. I mean, this is what happens when teams, they can't get the coach they really want, or that coach isn't available that offseason, and you re-sign a guy like Joe Philbin, where the issues are no different now than they were last year, or the year before to some degree with Philbin, and you keep him around, and then you're in week four. It's the same with Dennis Allen. You're in week four, and you blow the whole machine up, and how often do teams with interim coaches do anything?
Right. If the Dolphins don't block a punt against the Vikings in week 16 last year to win 37-35 in a meaningless game, they got a safety on that punt. I don't know if Joe Philbin comes back. Now, Philbin said, Stephen Ross, the owner, told him earlier in the season, oh, you'll be back next year. But he never went public with it. And he emotionally, after that win, much like Woody Johnson down in Miami, you know, emotionally bringing back Rex Ryan for another failed season, he announced Joe Philbin's the guy, and he went and tell him, hey, I'm definitely keeping you. And that's like, it's such an emotional short-term weird decision on a meaningless game, and then you waste this whole season.
But here's the big difference, since you brought it up, between what happened with Woody and Rex was after that season, and then they had an incompetent GM that didn't give Rex anything, so Rex was a dead man walking even though they brought him back. The Dolphins, they spent money. They brought in the best defensive tackle in football. They added, they redid their wide receiver group and gave Ryan Tannehill a big, fat new contract. So this Joe Philbin was set up well for success, at least from a roster standpoint, but he was never the guy, and everybody could see
not
that.
Not really. Coaches come and go in Miami. GMs come and go. Players come and go. What stays is a roster-building philosophy of buy expensive free agents and have a shallow roster like the old Cowboys used to, where if your stars get hurt, Cameron Wake has a hamstring injury. And Ndamukong Suh hasn't done anything. Brent Grimes has been playing injured. If your stars get hurt, nobody makes plays.
But it's all,
you compared it to the Jets. I was going to say, there's a lot of similarities. Because the Jets, they fire coach, but they keep the GM. But then they fire the GM, and then they keep the coach. Mm. And then they're doing one thing at a time. They hired Joe Philbin. Then they hired GM Dennis Hickey, who did not hire Joe Philbin. And then they they're going to keep Philbin. Oh, and then we're going to hire Tannenbaum. Where is Dennis Hickey, by the way? And then so
that's all true.
It's almost exactly the same, where it's different people having different agendas and no one's on the same page.
But I guess one thing just to point out is that, you know, as a group, we picked the Dolphins to make the playoffs this year. There was a lot of reason for optimism this season.
I had them in last place.
Well, I don't know who picked them then, because I didn't pick them, and I had to write up a post about us making them. Well,
plenty of people were optimistic about the Dolphins.
There was
outside
optimism
of this
around this team, and perhaps, yeah, this is another reminder that you need to have stability at the top of the organization for this ever to work.
You need
to build through the draft and not go out and buy free agents every year.
But that's you can't build through the draft when your philosophy and your schemes and your general managers and your assistants are changing year after year. Dolphins are they got to be careful, because they're close to getting into the cycle of not just being the 8-8 team, but the team that starts to go 4-5 wins every year because there's so much transition.
I'm excited about the Dan Campbell era, though. I mean, he seems like he's fun. I think he's going to have a good chance to be right there with Joe Vitt, you know, the one game of Jim Tom Sula, some of the great interim head coach memories that I've had in my life.
And then,
I mean, he just seems like there's going to be some fun stuff here with Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell's I love that. Yeah, he was a long-haired
monster. Can it be any less fun than it's been?
Like 8 months ago, and now he's the head coach of 53 men. But the other interesting kind of humorous / fascinating report.
Other than a man losing his job.
Other than that, is Ryan Tannehill. This is how bad things have gotten in Miami. This stuff always leaks out after a firing like this. That National Football Post first reported Tannehill had been getting rattled during practice sessions last week and was letting his frustrations out on practice squad players, including this one quote, according to a player who told the National Football Post, "Enjoy your practice squad paycheck. Enjoy your practice squad trophy." And it got so bad that Joey Phibbs was going up to the practice squad guys and say, "Hey, take it easy on QB1. And gentlemen, you know what this is. This is a clear case, Sydney.
Magnifico.
Ryan Tannehill's a little baby from Texas who can't handle it. And you give all this guy money and you build a team around him, but that is a la Raville Magnifico.
Defend your boy, Greg.
What do you mean?
Your Tannehill? Boy, Tannehill.
I'm not defending him in this case. It's worth noting, Jeff Garcia.
Is he still your boy? Or have you bailed on him like I bailed on Josh McCown?
That is a great question. I no longer think he has that high a ceiling. I think he is what he is, which is a mid-level guy who's going to make a long career as a starter, but I'm not excited about him ever turning the corner as a top 10 guy.
Not after hearing this.
Well, that's part of it.
Grim.
To be fair, Jeff Darlington strongly reported that he never said the paycheck line. Everything else was true, he said, but he said he never
Everybody's worried about his fragile little psyche, though.
No one's disputing, though.
I want to know the tone of this, and you know, stuff that happened in NFL practices. This is a quote from
like three or four different sources.
Well, I'm just saying,
Tannehill
has absolutely not been a problem on this team ever.
I'm not
ever.
As bothered by the quote. It's a little
right.
Kind of
I don't
a pissy
even care about
the
quote.
I agree.
Not a big deal.
Agree.
The problem is the head coach approaching these like C-level players and be like, "Hey, take it easy on our $100 million quarterback because he needs the confidence right
and
now."
And that's
like,
fair.
Whoa.
And you mentioned Rex Ryan, and for the bashing that Rex Ryan's taken, the one thing that Ryan mostly didn't do in New York was
going to be a begrudging.
Is it will not lose his entire roster. You have to dump your coach when Philbin over and over cannot handle these conflicts over. I have no problem with Tannehill being frustrated in practice and going off on whoever.
But
I want him to be frustrated. They've sucked.
Sure, but it's a sign that the pressure is getting to him a little bit. For a little bit of context, some teams, as Alex Marvez pointed out, you know, they really prefer that their practice squad team kind of show the defensive scheme, but not necessarily try to make plays on the ball. That's almost an idea that they have, that they're not supposed to be making these interceptions. Now, I thought it was really interesting. Campbell addressed the situation without mentioning Tannehill pretty directly. He said, when we have practice, the best teams, they go after each other. The defensive practice squad, they're going to go after the offense, and that's the team I want. And to me, that said it all, is that he thought Tannehill was being babied.
Joe Philbin seems like a wonderful person and a nice guy and a good human being who oversaw something where he had no authority. And this is the same coach who allowed Richie Incognito to be on the leadership council and allowed that whole controversy to happen in his locker room.
It's not for everyone, like that balance between being a leader and also not being the friends all the time. It's half these guys fail. They all fail, most of them.
In other AFC East news, the Buffalo Bills have some injury issues in their backfield. LeSean McCoy has a concussion. McCoy has a hamstring. Carlos Williams has a concussion. So they worked out some running backs today. And this is a special note to the Quiet Storm and myself. Trent Richardson was one of those running backs that was worked out, of course, cut by the Raiders in August or early September. Also worked out was a Dan Boom Heron, who actually got signed. Trent Richardson not signed. So T. Rich, and this is, let's just break this down real quick, Mark. When we talk about like P scale, and of course our sandwich prop was that, and this was made back in February, that T. Rich would never have another carry in the NFL. It didn't look good for me when he got guaranteed money from the Raiders. Looked obviously good for me when he fell down that depth chart and then got cut. This now lets me know that he's at least on the grid still. So my P scale on Trent Richardson is at about 5.5.
If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
So I'm like right at around like 5.5. Like he's still on the grid. I would have rather that he just was out somewhere giving up on football, but that's not the case.
Well, he certainly has the ability to lose these tryouts over and over. But what I like to see, because the whole premise was not whether he makes the Raiders or even plays in week one. It was if he ever plays a snap ever again. And what I kept hanging on, and again, he's ripe to fail, but it's October 6th and people were to give him tryouts. I thought this was going to happen in early December. As injuries mount and someone's like, we just need a fresh body to do practice, and then maybe he gets into a game or two. Then you're banged, because I already gave you a sandwich. You have to give me two back.
That's fair.
That's how it's going to work, and what's going to happen here.
And I was a little nervous about Rex being involved, because you know he's a little bit, I'm a maverick and all that stuff. But by the way, even if he got signed to a team, you don't get the wager because he's got to carry. Kristen Michael's had, I think, one carry this season.
I think I'm very clear of the outline of the deal.
Okay.
And that's why I'm confident.
That was more
one more snap ever.
By the way, Ray Rice is never going to get a job. If he can't get a tryout when guys like T. Rich are getting tryouts, we're not going to see Ray Rice no more. And your boy Pierre Thomas off the grid. I don't know. What's going on?
Should have taken that job with the Texans.
Yeah. All right. In other news, this is interesting. Odell Beckham, you know, not off to the type of start that perhaps we expected. And there is some buzz in the air around the NFL about, you know, his personality and where he's at head-wise after an offseason in which he was, you know, the biggest star in the NFL just about. The Bills went after Odell Beckham after Sunday's loss. Stephon Gilmore specifically had a lot of things to say. And, Wes, I'm going to tee you up on this. Gilmore said, I don't know what's up with him. He acts like you're supposed to let him catch the ball. He's weird. He gets mad when you play physical with him. He's weird. And then he went on to say, he's different. It's kind of like you're playing your little brother and he gets mad at you for being too physical with him, throwing a tantrum. I'm like, man, we're playing football. It's a physical game. He's a prima donna. He feels like he's on top of the world and nobody's supposed to do anything to him. And finally, Gilmore added that, you know, they watch tape. They don't see him as that special guy. He's got great hands, but he's not as good as what people think after that one catch. He's calling him a one-hit wonder, Chris Wessling. The floor is yours because ODB is your boy.
He said he's no Sammy Watkins.
You're right. He's much better than Sammy Watkins,
wow.
who Apparently, Sammy Watkins is a new Tom Savage. I'm not sure if he really exists. He's never on the field. Look, there are a couple of ways to look at this. I threw Odell Beckham out of the penthouse of my stable of the boys over the offseason when he was complaining about his teammates making fun of him.
Lover's quarrel.
This is another sign that he's a prima donna. I totally get that. Stephon Gilmore's right. He is weird. Odell Beckham's a weird dude, and he's not getting back in the stable.
He's not only out of the penthouse, he's out of the stable of boys?
He's out of the stable of boys. He's gone. He's done. Whoa. I don't do prima donnas.
I'm going to need to, I don't know, have a cigarette.
That said.
Take the rest of the day off.
That said, Stephon Gilmore might not be very bright, is definitely not watching game tape. And
stop.
Wait, he's got to be watching game tape.
And loses all credibility when he says that Odell Beckham's a one-hit wonder.
Well,
one-catch wonder.
He's clearly biased and emotional because Odell Beckham threw punches at multiple Bills. This is on film. One of them,
That's what got him thrown out. You can't deal with the physicality, so you come up punching.
Well, I mean, I don't think that he's a one-hit wonder by any stretch, though.
Well, here's one thing.
Of course, he's not. That's
ridiculous.
Here's something to take out of this. He is on a pace, I believe, for a 1,000-yard season. He's on pace to have a nice season. But he has certainly been a little disappointing this year. And it makes you wonder, A, if teams maybe figured out how to play him on defense a little bit. B, if the offseason and all the outside football stuff that he got involved with somehow did change his mentality or mindset. And see if there's a little secret weapon here with Odell Beckham, is that you can get under his skin and it will take him out of his game. All those things seem fair because he's a good receiver right now, but he's not transcendent, which he was last year.
Go ahead.
The Rams tried to get under his skin last year with dirty shots all game, and he got him for 190 yards. This is about – Eli Manning has faced the least pressure of any quarterback in the league this year, and it's behind a bad offensive line. It's because teams are playing 6 and 7 defensive backs in an effort to stop Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, and it's because they let go of the ball. The Bills threw the ball in an average, this is from Mike Rodak, in 1.7 seconds in that Bills game. That's the shortest amount of time any quarterback's throwing the ball all season, because all they're doing is dropping back 3 or 5 steps and throwing the ball 6 yards. That's not going to get big yards for Odell Beckham. I think he's looked fantastic during certain moments this season. But he punched the guy in the helmet with his fist. He should have been ejected from the game. He's going to get a lot of fines.
All right, so he's a little bit immature. I mean, that's fine. He's also 23, coming off an offseason where you came into the league last year with a chip on your shoulder, because this time last year, everyone was ripping this guy for not shaking off a hamstring injury and getting on the field. Then he proves everyone wrong, and then suddenly NFL Network wants to do specials on you when you're 22. Everyone acts like you're a king. Every time he throws a softball, it gets mixed the front page of the newspaper. It's ridiculous. I mean, that's going to toy with your head.
I can't believe you're defending a high-level millennial. I did not see this coming.
Because when it's coming from his own teammates and they're calling him weird and all that stuff, that is going to get on my radar more than the opponents who are dealing with him. He shouldn't be throwing punches, but it's like his career – I'm done – with these players that after 1 or 2 years we're saying what they are and we're done with them.
To Beckham's credit, he has not been incredible this year, but this just tells you how great he was last year. He's on pace for 96 catches and 1,200 yards and 8 TDs right now. He's on pace for an All-Pro or Pro Bowl season, and he hasn't even played that well yet. So,
he has 200 yards next week, and what's the on-pace stats after that?
And he absolutely dominated two different halves of games this year in a way that almost no receiver has. It just hasn't been every single half.
And are we surprised the Buffalo Bills players are talking again? I mean, how about they keep their mouths shut? I mean, part of it is give me a break with the Bills.
It's getting old.
That's fair. All right, so that's what's happening in the news.
That was a good news segment. It was all good, Dan.
All right, Greg's back. I thought Greg was a little low-key in the intro, and I could feel the energy, but now it's coming back.
It was always here. I was just, sometimes you lay back. You lay back and watch the pros do their work.
Fair enough. Okay.
Or you take a segment off. You can call whatever
you want. Is this new energy natural?
What?
The new energy that you gained in the last 15 minutes.
That's a fair
question. What are you trying to say?
I'm just asking what you're up to.
Is this manufactured energy?
Well, I'm drinking coffee if that's what you're getting at.
That's organic.
Drugs or anything.
That's organic. Okay. It's acceptable.
Greg, your thoughts on the Daily Fantasy League controversy. Go ahead. Floor is yours.
I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
Don't care.
blow it all up.
All right, let's get into our power poll. We're going to do one every quarter of the season. So we did one before the season started, and now after week four, it's time to do another. And let's start this by doing, how do we want to do this? Let's go through the power poll as it stands right now. Greg, you sent it to me, and I already lost it. Do you have the current power poll?
Sure.
So many things. Our printer didn't work today, so I'm all discombobulated. All right, here we go. 1 through 10. Patriots, Packers, Cardinals, Broncos, Bengals, Seahawks, Falcons, Panthers, Steelers, Jets. That's the top 10. Let's talk about that. All right, we'll start. Why don't we do it this then? Do it this way. The top 10 back in early September, we had the Lions at 8, and the Lions are now where, Greg?
They are buried at 25, which is pretty high for the only winless team in the league.
That's true. The Colts were 5. Where do we have them then?
They have fallen all the way to 14.
All right. The Eagles we had at 6, bullish on Chip, the genius.
That was trouble. They are at 23 right now.
And to what I was saying earlier, we had the Dolphins as the 10th best team in football entering week one. They are now 1-3 and
26, which seems very high. I put them dead last at 32. I think they would have been the worst team in the
league. Which you can't really argue. I put them higher. I think I had them around 22 or so or 21 just because I think they're talking big about Campbell. I could see them starting to play harder and maybe win some games and end up around 500. I see them, and I do think there's talent there. I think the team – awful start, not the worst team in football.
I think they've played like the worst team. Their one win was exceedingly lucky, and the last 2 weeks were as bad as they could possibly be. So that's why.
Is Campbell tackling for them? I mean, part of it is just they're looking absolutely terrible on the field.
11 through 20, Rams just missing the top 10. By the way, Jets, I see you at number 10 in the power poll.
Well, which out of those teams that have fallen the furthest – do we think maybe he's going to bounce back a little bit? I mean, that's a huge loss.
Okay.
For the Ravens have sunk. The Lions we had as a top 8 team. They were the start of our second tier. And they're forked.
I would go with the Colts, not because I think the Colts are what we thought they were before the season. They're not. But you're in an absolutely wretched division where you could string together games, and Andrew Luck, if he, you know, rebounds some, then why not?
Rebounds. That's interesting. We just with Dave Mark this morning, we did this thing where we did the quarter poll awards, and you could with those four top 10 teams, if we had a category, most disappointing team, Lions, Colts, Eagles, and Dolphins, that is quite a tough category to win. But I would probably say it would have to be the Dolphins because it's been so all encompassing, just a total collapse of the organization. But you could make a case for any of those teams.
How many interim coaches, I'd like to know, have turned a team around? Like, most of them go about 2-10.
1961 was the last time an interim coach made the playoffs.
Oh, my gosh.
Usually, it's like just a caretaker for an ultra top 5 pick disaster show.
And I like the not talking about the teams that fell, but the Falcons climbing all the way up. We had no respect for the Panthers. We had them as the third place team in the NFC South at 23, and now they're in the top 8. And when I filled this out, tell me if you guys would disagree. I realized, man, the middle of the NFL seems soft. There was about 9 good teams. I would stop it at the Steelers. The fact that the Jets and the Rams are 10-11 kind of shows you like how much this league is up for grabs right now.
I put the Jets comfortably ahead of the Panthers.
Well, that's why, like, you know, when I said I thought the Jets were a top 10 team in September, it wasn't because I think the Jets are great. But Mark laughs because he thinks I'm making a point that I called it.
Well,
but what I'm really saying is that when I did think that they could be a top 10 team, it wasn't because I think the Jets are a contender. It's a very top heavy league right now.
Well, but I think that compared to some other seasons, the top 10 has some shaky offerings who might not even be close
right.
3 or 4 weeks ago.
What, Falcons and Panthers?
I'm just saying compared to what we look at in general when we look at the top half of the league, there is average all over the NFL.
Let's look at our 11 through 20. Rams, Vikings, Bills, who really, you know, they could easily have been 7 if we were doing this a week earlier, but that was a bad loss. The Colts at 14, the Giants at 15, the 16, the Dalton line is the Chargers, which makes sense. Cowboys at 17,
totally.
Redskins 18, Ravens at 19, and then we had the Raiders at 20. Those teams are all kind of more or less the same, I would say, with the exception of the Colts, if Andrew Luck gets healthy and they put it together, and the Bills, who are really hard to figure out.
Yeah, much of the NFC East is in that group. The Raiders got a lot of love. I mean, I think that also shows, if you look when we do post this and you read our, you know, article, once you get past the NFC East, Redskins, Ravens, if you got the Raiders at 20, that means there's a whole end of the league that's kind of up for grabs too. I mean, that any of those teams could start emerging and surprise us, and maybe a fork team comes and forks us.
Yeah, who is the team most likely out of that pack to make the playoffs? Let's throw out the Colts because they're kind of an outlier.
Well, you know who I'm going to say, the St. Louis Rams, who I had before the season. I still, it's going to be tricky in that division to get three teams into the playoffs, and I love the Cardinals. We have the Cardinals number three, which is great. It's cool to see the Bengals. Like, we really believe in them. But I think the Rams have the most talent of all of those teams.
What about a team, how deep down are we going? What about
20.
The Redskins at 18? Because that division to me is an absolute unpredictable race at the moment, and the Redskins have shown they can play well.
But they're like there's so many teams in the league right now that are so schizophrenic from week to week, so it's hard to really
including
make sense
the entire
of
NFC East, though. Like a team could go 8-8 or 9-7 and win that division.
Same with the Cowboys; they're getting Dez back potentially in week 7. Romo won't be too far behind.
They're getting Greg Hardy back. They're getting Rolando McClain back this week. They've had Sean Lee been injured. They have had by far the worst injury luck. They've been somewhat impressive that they've even been competitive with Brandon.
Well, I like Whedon, but you've got to win a game.
That's
so
the
you've got to actually have to pull out some wins here.
They should have won one of these two games, and now
they
put themselves
the
in a tough spot. Yeah. All right, now here's 21 from out of 232. Greg, there are 32 teams. Titans at 21, Chiefs, Eagles, Saints, Lions at 0-4 there at 25, Dolphins, Jaguars, Browns at 28, Mark, so I think they moved up a little bit.
I don't think so.
A very small amount, potentially.
That's the same place they've been holding for 3 years of their podcast.
They went up one spot.
For like 16 years.
Way to go, Brownies!
Yeah. The Bears,
okay.
The Bears, 29.
Look,
Texans.
One win will get you.
Texans.
More spots in the pool.
At 30. The Niners at 31. They should be 32 to me. And the Bucks at 32 on our joint power poll, which we all, the four of us, in addition to the Chicago correspondent, Kevin Patra, who hurled a sneaky expletive at me after the completion of the Monday night game, which I was okay with.
I don't think you were alone.
And then, of course, Connor Orr in his New Jersey Haunted Mansion.
Why did you get that kind of a treatment?
I made a comment that I knew that the Lions were going to blow it or something. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and his response was,
which you were right,
something me. That's all I'll say.
Huh. Yeah. Well, you know, you.
It's fine.
We also had a, you know, a long text conversation about how you don't think the Lions fans have experienced that much pain, or, you know, they don't have the special pathos of the New York area because we don't know Detroit people because they're in Detroit.
I know Detroit.
Meanwhile.
I love this country.
The great, you know, one of the greatest receivers of all time literally ties an all-time Lions franchise record for receiving on the same play that he fumbles the ball.
Ooh.
Going in. I mean, that was an amazing, painful moment.
As I tweeted, it would be in the hurt files of my pain rankings, which you can find at NFL.com/pain rankings. And just so everyone knows.
Do it right now.
The Detroit Lions are at number 4 on the pain ranking, so it's not like they got jobbed too hard. I just don't think there is a little missing, you know, je ne sais quoi when it comes to the Lions.
You said they had lost New York media.
That the Bills.
Exactly. That's what my point was.
Well,
sure, whatever,
I agree
guys.
With Dan 100%.
Out of touch. Bills, Jets, Browns have that. That the Lions. So the Lions
I'm going to make
stunk.
My own pain rankings and put the Jets like 12th where they belong.
Your case for them 12. Was that the Lions have been too bad to even count for pain.
Right.
That's what Lions fans to me are. They're a lot like Kevin. It's they just expect
angry?
The worst. It all is boiling inside. They're angry about it. It's all just pain. No hope.
I'm going to trust, Greg, that when you completely dismiss Dan's 30-plus years – following the Jets and wallowing with fellow Jets fans, that you know at least more than one Lions fan that has absolutely impressed you with the level of passion, anger, and lostness.
Greg,
I'm assuming it's based on research and many Lions fans, not just playing devil's advocate
to the fact
that the Jets at every draft growing up were the most
downtrodden. Playing devil's advocate?
The draft's in New York.
The draft is in New York.
I'm just saying, Jets fans have to be viewed as one of the most bizarre, downtrodden fan bases.
Absolutely, and it's all very close. But Lions have great fans. I mean, when you watch the games, I'm taking the Lions crowd over the Jets crowd. Detroit is a sports town.
By the way, I like how you act like you know about Detroit and I don't.
That's my
issue. Tell me about your knowledge of the Detroit area.
Well, I spent a lot of time in the Motor City. I watched the movie. I watched the movie 8 Mile. I own many of Eminem's solo albums, but also some like when he was a guest star on compilations. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's a placebo. You're not. There's just, no.
Greg
there's
just
no
floated
research
off
here.
Onto Lake Michigan there, just a corpse. Listen,
ridiculous.
You can make the case, obviously, the Lions are a top three
That's
team,
all.
But just to
this
go after the
This is a compliment
Jets.
To your thing that it's inspiring
it
so
like
much
one.
Debate. That's what you're looking
later.
For is debate.
A debate is great. Embrace the debate. Anything else with the?
Yeah,
the old
how
power
are
ball?
The Texans not 32nd?
That's fair. That's fair. You can make a case. The Bucks are pretty
oh, it's
bad.
It's all a
too.
Mess down there. I would think the one team, though, the Titans, where are they? They are sitting
21.
21?
Okay.
We're a little underrating them.
I think the thing is they had a bye week, and let's say they play the Bills Nets. If they ever pull that out and they go 3-1, they're not a 20. They're not the 21st team
two and
in my
they,
book.
They're 1-2.
You could make the case oh, that they should flip Forgive with me. The Bills if that would happen.
Yeah, I just think that like they were lost in action, and so we kind of forgot about them, but I had the record wrong. So
it's crazy how many bad teams there are because all of those 10 last teams, they're fans. Their fans would just say that they're having the most miserable season ever. Chiefs fans have to be miserable. Eagles fans
Greg
are
Greg has quickly become the fan expert.
Saints fans.
He's speaking
I'm just
for every fan base in the country.
I'm just
Chiefs fans are extra miserable because they can't yell at you anymore.
That's true.
That's true.
But in Chase Daniel, how about that?
I'm a man of the people.
I'm talking about.
Now that Dan has exposed himself.
By
as
the way, speaking of Chase Daniel, number 32, dead last in QBR right now is Alex Smith.
What's Andrew Luck?
31st.
He's hanging around.
I know he's in that mix.
Let's get back to what you were saying there, Greg. You were about to bury me, so I noticed.
Oh, what? Oh, that I was going to take over as a man of the people. It was a little thing I used. It was sarcasm. I'm not a man of the people. I'm not a man of the people.
All right. So that is our like power poll at the quarter poll, I call it. Why not? Keep rolling. We'll bring this back. We'll trot this back out after week 8. Wes.
I was told by apparently at least 73 horse racing aficionados yesterday. The quarter pull is actually at the 3-quarter mark, not the 1-quarter mark.
Was that Mr. Falcon at the iTunes review store?
Yeah, it was.
More acorns, please. All right. Well, you know, that's what we call it is what the horse people don't call it. I mean, it's just different. Things
it's
are different.
Apparently taken from a horse race. The quarter pull is like the last quarter of the race.
The power pull at the quarter point of the NFL season. All right, moving on. The time has come, gentlemen, to take out some cutlery.
Stick a fork in them.
And we did, Sydney, our new producer, who's doing a wonderful job so far today, she let me know via the old Slack chat, quit Slack and sign up for Slack today. Need some sponsors. Come out of Slack. She let me know on our IM chat client that we forked 6 teams last week.
Yes.
They were the
Patriots,
49ers.
Well, you know what?
Bears.
Let's just go over the whole list, and I'm going to add the three new ones at all. All right, let's do this. Here we go.
Shame.
The Cleveland Browns.
Shame.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Shame.
The Detroit Lions.
Shame.
The New Orleans Saints. And the San Shame. Francisco 49ers.
Shame.
Okay. Now.
Shame.
We have 3 more to add to that list. We voted. It has to be unanimous amongst the 4 of us. And the 3 new teams are.
Shame.
The Houston Shame. Texans.
Shame.
The Miami Dolphins.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
And the Oakland Raiders.
Shame.
Oh.
All gone. Mm. That is 9 teams in the NFL. And, Mark, it pains you to hear the Raiders, I could tell.
Well, it comes down to they're going to make the playoffs, so they're not. That's all this exercise is. Not are they a better team than last year? Are they more fun to watch?
And it's not are they going to be 5-5 and in the mix even at some point.
Yes.
It's
Remember,
it's
we're being bold.
And we are. And from that angle, you know, when I came in, I was off yesterday, and Dan said, here's the teams we're going to fork. That gave me pause, Oakland, just because – Amari Cooper is a weapon. I just think they've got better quarterback play. There's something going on with their defense here and there, but they're not going to make the playoffs, so I had to agree with you, but that stuck with me. That one we could be paying the charity on.
It feels
maybe.
I'll take my chances that the Raiders aren't ready for the playoffs yet. Personally, you know, they're improved, but what about
we
the Jaguars?
Agree.
We didn't fork them yet. I know there is some love for the Jaguars, but they're still the Jags, and they still blew a game.
Half of us didn't want to fork the Jaguars.
Andrew Luck team, Andrew Luckless team So Greg and Wes.
I thought Blake Bortles played pretty well against the Colts. The final score doesn't show that, but he made some throws. He played pretty well. And I don't know. To me, like, I know you're hesitant about the Raiders. I think one thing we don't pay attention enough is to division.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the Texans, according to NumberFire, have a 26% chance of making the playoffs. The Dolphins have a 5.5, and the Raiders have a 4.3% chance.
Right, because the AFC South is so bad. I mean, last year we forked the entire NFC South except for the Saints, and the Panthers made the playoffs, a fact that none of us even remembered when we were talking about making mistakes with the fork just about a week ago. So generally, right.
Well, that right. said, number
that's
five.
Unnecessary.
I'm just saying that's
who won
the impression.
There?
That's
these
the
playoff
impression.
Odds do not recognize Bill O'Brien's complete inability to run a quarterback room, too.
I think your point is founded, though, that you don't want to fork half the division when the Colts' quarterback has a separated shoulder, and
right.
we have no idea what that's going to turn into.
Well, all I'd say one thing for the Raiders, and again, I'd happy send them down the river. That's where they're going, but. The Chiefs and the Chargers are the big blockade to you getting to 8 or 9 wins? Those are two completely up
yeah,
and down
eight wins
teams.
Ain't going to cut it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's not even the probably. AFC West of two seasons ago where you're going to get buried twice by the Broncos, probably twice by the Chiefs, and probably twice by the Chargers.
By the way,
now, there's an argument to be made there.
Chiefs aren't a bad team, by the way, I don't think. I think the Chiefs
I don't think
blew
the Raiders
a terrible
are a bad
game
team either.
In week two. Well, I didn't say they were terrible. But – I think the Chiefs blew a terrible game in week two, and then the schedule gods got them. I wouldn't be surprised if they come on strong and they're in the mix.
I wouldn't be surprised if we fork Kansas City next week.
Yeah. Well, they got to win.
They've given up 30 points in three straight games for the first time since 1987.
They have not been competitive the last 2 weeks. The first one, it's misleading, at least in terms of the defense, because that was their offense that got the points scored on them. But either way, they weren't really very competitive against the good teams, so there's no reason to think that they suddenly will be.
Baltimore Ravens were 0-3. We did not fork them. They were very lucky to get that one win. They got a lot of help to get it, but they still got to be squarely in our sights heading into week five.
But their schedule, they're going to be heavy favorites the next 2 weeks. It's the 49ers and another, I can't remember off the top of my
Browns,
head.
Browns, I believe.
I think the Browns.
So and then a bye.
So they're going to have a chance to get help.
It'll be interesting when we've already forked the Browns again, all agreed on that, but the Ravens will probably could potentially have a worse record than the Browns, and we are not going to fork the Ravens 2 weeks from now. You got to bury that team.
Well, I mean,
I just don't like the Ravens.
You hate the Ravens.
Yeah, it's
well, no,
it's
but if the
personal.
Ravens go, if they're
but
2-4
we made the
at
right
some
move.
Point,
we could have, if we would have forked them at 0-3, we would be sweating bullets right now because they would have been 1-3 with two easy games coming up potentially into their bye, and we'd be like, oh, hamana.
But if we're playing this game right, we're going to have to sweat some bullets.
Yes, of course.
Sweat some bees, and that's why I say get rid of the Raiders.
These teams should want us
the
to
Jags.
Fork. These teams should want us to fork them. History says,
well, you guys,
one
honestly,
a year, make it out.
You guys on October.
Greg is not a friend of the segment.
Talk about bold. On October 6th, you guys are telling me we're too afraid to rule out the Jaguars making the playoffs.
I didn't say that. I would have forked
them.
I am
telling you that.
The division is smart, though.
That division is absolute tire fire right now.
We're just starting this little journey that's called the 2015 season. I'm excited, but it's just barely begun that we're getting in. A lot of crazy things
are going to happen. It's over for 9 teams.
9 teams, go home. Don't even play the rest of your schedule.
Sorry.
There is a rule. This was a nice of Greg because it lowers our workload a little bit. Any team that we've forked, no one attached to this podcast needs to write any stories about any of those teams.
Oh, is that true?
They're off the grid.
The Jaguars are a bad, bad football team. The good news is so are the Colts.
Mm. It's fair. That's fair, dog. All right. There you go. So the fork has come out. 9 teams. Done. You're gone. It's over. Give up.
Mark, that gave me a pretty good idea. We could actually have a forked beat writer. Like, everyone else doesn't cover those teams, but then, for instance, you just cover the teams that were forked.
Ooh,
that's
I
it.
Like that. Your thoughts, Mark?
Seems a little bit ridiculous.
Okay.
But I'm not in charge around here, so.
Let's hit up our Thursday night preview now as week five begins. It keeps on rolling. And the Indianapolis Colts, who squeak by really by the grace of God and bad field goal kicking, they get a win with Matt Hasselbeck. To move to 2-2 and take first place in the wretched AFC South, and now they head to Houston, speaking of wretched, to face the Texans. And, Wes, I'll tee you up on this one. They are 1-3, and Bill O'Brien made an interesting decision on Monday. What was that?
He watched Ryan Mallett play football and decided he wanted to watch him again.
That's it. I thought the Ryan Mallett experience was over. I thought we weren't getting anything else. But what happened here is Bill O'Brien banged himself. Let's face it. He went away from Brian Hoyer too quickly and thought, just hope Ryan Mallett wouldn't be a tire fire. He is. And now he's in this position where he doesn't know when he can go back. He's really, Wes, as you put it on Twitter, put himself in a corner.
The only explanation I've heard that makes sense, and this came from one of my Twitter followers. I forget his name. I apologize for that.
One of your fans, you mean?
Part of my fan base.
Yes.
is that if Bill O'Brien's going to turn back to Brian Hoyer, he owes him at least a week of preparation, not a short week against the Colts.
Okay.
So that would allow him to turn back to Hoyer after 10 days and more time to prepare for the next game.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because watching Ryan Mallett play, it's literally incredible that anybody would start him again.
And I guess if the Colts, who are better on defense, the defense has not been the biggest problem in Indianapolis. If they go and drop and bomb on Ryan Mallett on national television, no one's going to give O'Brien as hard of a time for switching back.
If the Colts drop a bomb on Brian Hoyer, what do you do? Turn back to Mallett again?
Right. That all makes sense, but he has to be thinking what a big game this is. They're playing Andrew Luck, who will be starting this game. It's fully expected that he's going to be back for this game. And I think that helps inform why he didn't play last week. Maybe they thought he couldn't handle 2 and 5 days, and so they kept him out. I mean, it's a huge, huge game for the Texans. If they can win on the road, they're right back in it. And yet,
we're sweating bullets.
Yeah, but when you watch them, you're right. There's something like one for – when it's third and long, it's over. They might as well punt on third and long. They should be the first team to do that in a while. I think they're 1-17 or something like that on third and long because it's all mallet worm burners. It's all him just throwing at the feet of people.
It is. And it's no surprise that the Houstons are dead last in the NFL in yards after catch because there's no after catch element in their offense.
The Evan Silva, the Roto-World grinder, who we'd have to get on the show at some point,
had
this tweet on Mallett. Ryan Mallett lacks anticipation, athleticism, touch, an ability to locate passes, and an understanding of his own limitations.
But.
Sums it up.
But he's good at making Dan Hansis laugh.
Oh, I love Ryan Mallett. I'm happy that he's started because the Texans aren't going anywhere. And Cleveland Springsteen, I like that he kind of looks like the lead singer of Live, but he can't play either.
That's a good point. The Texans aren't going anywhere. Let me ask you guys this. John Fox is punting his season. They're trying to get the best draft pick possible. Does Bill O'Brien have enough job security to pull that off? Because when you start Ryan Mallett in back-to-back games like this, it certainly seems like you're punting your season.
I have a hard time thinking any coach wants to ever lose, even John Fox. It's just not in anyone's DNA that you want to show up because it's such a miserable experience to lose. I think I don't believe John Fox is punting the season. I think he's doing everything
possible.
He
just punted one game.
What are you talking about?
The Seahawks game. Well, he didn't try to win.
He's misguided in what
he's
going to win.
Anyway, but.
He's misguided in what's going to win games. But I think in his head, that's his way of trying to.
He tried to win that game in Seattle.
I think he's doing what he thinks.
But Wes, tried to win.
Let's look at it from another angle. I have to agree that at this level, that pro coaches who have zero job security, worse than ever before, aren't punting away seasons starting in week 5 because you're not going to be there. You're not going to hand
Fox
the next guy.
Be there. I don't think they're going to fire him.
Well, I don't think they're going to fire O'Brien either. I think he could have a 3-13 season, and
that organization doesn't knee jerk and blow the thing up every 2 years.
On a different point, more kind of like a big picture football thing. I'm just curious what you guys think. So, like, the Texans, there's a chance because of this quarterback play that they're going to go 3-13 or perhaps even worse. J.J. Watt, sometimes like in the offseason when we talk about who is the best player in the NFL. And J.J. Watt sometimes beats out Aaron Rodgers when those discussions happen. Isn't it a little interesting that you could have the greatest football player on the planet defensively and it doesn't matter? And you can never say the same thing about a quarterback. It just kind of points out, first of all, how important quarterback is, but also maybe the J.J. Watt stuff, as great as he is, it's just kind of apples and oranges.
Even with Lawrence
greatest
Taylor,
player.
The Giants needed Phil Simms to go have finally get off the schneid and have a good season for them to turn into a playoff team.
The proof was 2 years ago. What was the Texans' record?
I think they went 2-14.
I thought that J.J. Watt deserved Defensive Player of the Year that year. I thought he was the best Defensive Player of the Year. Cortez Kennedy did win it 1 year when the Seahawks went 2-14. I mean, it's football is such a team sport, and it seems so obvious, but one player does not make that big of a difference.
Unless it's the quarterback.
Unless it's the quarterback.
Well, it's a difference
to answer your question, Aaron Rodgers is the best player in football and has been for 5 years.
But should a defensive player even be in the top 10?
But it's not most valuable. He's the best at what he does.
But Aaron Rodgers is a better football player. He impacts the game in a greater fashion.
You know, I just like to ask those kind of big picture things just to, you know, bend your ears, get those minds thinking a little bit.
Go find me one person who would rather have J.J. Watt than Aaron Rodgers on their team.
I liked a couple years ago during Mark's protest against the top 10 list where he listed all quarterbacks. It was the right kind of thinking.
He shipwrecked the segment, but it was good.
Well, listen, the name of truth.
He had a cause, and his cause was right.
Let's put Andre
Johnson at number 6.
Who did that?
I don't know. I'm sure someone made a gaffe.
That was the year they didn't put Julio Jones in.
Andre Johnson's
the
highest paid number 5 receiver in the league right now.
Think he'll have a catch on Thursday?
51 yards on 20 targets. That is hard to do.
Not a great fantasy pick by the old Zeus.
I'm still holding out hope that he's just getting acclimated. I know it sounds naive.
No, I hope.
He's been such a great player for so long. I just hope that the quarterbacks don't trust him.
Him and Dwayne Bowe.
Before we go, real quick, winner and score, Mark Sessler.
Of what?
Oh, my God.
Thursday night game?
Yes.
Colts 35-10.
Wow. Andrew Luck comes back with a vengeance on the offensive problem.
We just ranked the Texans as the second worst team in the entire league.
That's not crazy. Wes?
I predict that J.J. Watt will have more sacks than the Texans have points.
All right. Wow. What's the score of the game?
Colts win 24-6. J.J. Watt has 7 sacks.
Wow. That would be fun.
I like your score so much, I agree with it. 24-6 Colts.
I don't think the Colts are very good right now.
Nor do I.
So I'm going to say 17-13. We get a little entertainment. Some ugly football. Frank Gore, the Inconvenient Truth, bounces back after a tough week.
Ryan Mallett, 2 pick sixes.
I reserve the right to change change that pick if Luck doesn't play, but Mallett's going to bomb out again, let's be honest.
Well, let's be honest. That's a good it's a good show to be honest on. Let's not lie.
Okay. All right. That's it for today's show. Hey, Sydney. Not yet. Sydney, I just want to check in with you and say, how was your first
show
behind
the glass?
I know. I like that.
I love that music.
You're very eager.
She did an outstanding.
You're like a Google intern, A+ just
job.
Filled with hope and belief.
Yeah. Well.
Wanderlust.
Just trying to start on a high note.
You are. I think I would give you a solid grade.
Nailed it.
A+. For show
well, one. Okay. Well,
nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say.
So welcome
only
aboard, Sydney. A lot of fun times ahead. That's it for the Around the NFL Podcast Tuesday edition. We'll be back late Thursday, early Friday, so check it out. This is Dan Hansis signing off for The Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and Sydney behind the glass. Until Thursday night.